And he went on and he became Swimply.
Really?
Yep. If you're able to visualize yourself as the future you,
clearly not for everybody, and saying that it's for everybody is disvalidating those people that are working so hard at it.
Or you do the wrong thing with money, you go to Gehenna.
I have tremendous burnout. Is this common?
It's a lack of direction.
Dream bigger. Welcome to another episode of Positivity. David, how does somebody know if they have a good business idea that they can go to the market or not? What's the common denominator?
Hard question. So I think the first step is recognizing that it's not about the idea. Everyone thinks it's the idea, but the ideas are cheap. Everyone has ideas. It's the ability to execute them and being the willingness to pivot when you find yourself hitting a wall, I think is the definition of success more than the brilliant idea. Or there's a great commercial from GoDaddy that it showed seven different people, different ethnicities, and each one was saying how he came up with an idea, right? And he didn't do anything with it. And then you have one guy who actually did it. Wow. And it hit home because we all have that, right? We all have our million ideas that run through our heads that we never did anything about. And we think, if I only had the right idea, if you know, I only had the right partner, if I only had enough money, then I'll be happy, then I'll start, then I'll do. And reality is that the world really works the other way around. I just saw a great part, just bring some Judaism into that. Mm-hmm. They brought down this week's parsha, the Mishkan. They say, how do these people know how to make the curtains and use the jewels and all that? And the answer was, they didn't. So how did they get the skills? And the answer is they had a desire to do it. And that ratzon, that desire to do it, Hashem then gave them the tools they needed to accomplish it. And we think it's the other way around. I need the idea and then I'll be rich, right? And reality is it's not that way. It's you need to start, then you gain the skills. And it's through your failures that you gain the skills, by the way, not through your successes.
Exactly.
And I always say that I know what to do in my business because I've done all the things, I've made all the mistakes, and I've learned from them. So from the failures gives you the new idea. And when a guy comes to me and he's opening up a new business and he never did anything before and he never worked for anything before, even if he has the greatest idea, I'm like, you know, in the back of my head, I'm thinking, you know, he probably won't make it.
Wow. Okay, so now we got a little bit of an introduction and I'll go to the actual introduction. This is David Konigsberg. And he personally helped me when I struggled, like out of the blue. I just called him. Somebody was like, I had a struggle in my business and I was like, somebody's like, call David Konigsberg, he's going to know what to do. And at that time, the struggle was very little. I think it was about hiring my first employee or something. I can't remember what it was, or trying to pivot in some way in the business. And David just gave me his time, 20 minutes or 30 minutes, whatever. And ever since, whenever I have an idea or something, I call him up. So David has two companies. One does branding, one does marketing, and he's also a coach. So I felt like it's very appropriate to have him on and get to learn a little bit about coaching, how people operate, how the market operates, and also how businesses can put themselves out there with new ideas. So it's an honor to have
you
on.
Thank you for having me.
I love the concept of Rutsoin because that's really what everything is. My business idea, I started off, I had nothing. I got fired from my job exactly two years ago. And I used to sit in my recliner every morning and dream of the kind of business that I want. The amount of employees, the amount of clients, the amount of money, the car that I'm going to drive, everything. And slowly, and not so slowly, it actually took pretty quick until I started manifesting because I was so convinced that it's going to happen. And you remember, you also met me a couple of shows.
I was
a little bit very young still, very stupid probably, very childish in a sense. But I was selling a bluff. It was like I wasn't really selling anything. And right now, Baruch Hashem, I do have, I think we're up to 13 successful big clients that do like
amazing, big
stuff, from Clients Naturals to Clients Ice Cream. So I feel like, you know, you mentioned Rutsoin. We say every day in Ashrei, Pasai Chesedeichu Masbi L'Cholcha Rutsoin. God literally gives us Masbi L'Cholcha Rutsoin, you know, according to their will. So is that concept that you use when you coach your clients, figuring out their will? You go into the spiritual, because I think you're more from I think you are more a technical kind of person. You don't buy into BS, and you're just like very straight up. I know when I call you, you're, you know, I recently called you with an idea, and I'll share. It was about opening a website where people can buy all types of foods, and then you were like, no, that's not going to work. But if you put it on your own name and you sell it in the grocery, that might work. And it was so true. You saved me years probably of struggling if I wouldn't have had that conversation with you. So, two questions, I guess. Do you work by defining a person's will? And how do you actually know what's a good idea and what's not?
So, a lot to unpack in that, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing I'll say is that what you were saying before, that you were visualizing the life you wanted, is something that people, and I used to think, was like hogwash, right? People talk about visualization and breath work and thing. And then I actually heard someone explain it beautifully. And from then on, I had a new way of looking at it. But the reason why it works is because if you're able to visualize yourself as the future you, you'll feel emotions come up that stop you from achieving it, right? Yeah. So we all have limited beliefs. We have beliefs that set us on this path to make us comfortable with who we are, right? So let's say when you're poor, your belief is that people who have money are irresponsible. Or you do the wrong thing with money, you go to Gehenna, right? Or, right, we say these things to make ourselves feel better. But then when we have the money, we have the same belief that made us feel comfortable before, now make us feel uncomfortable with having it. So people squander it. People ruin their they can't grow because they get in their own way.
Right.
So one of the steps to solve that is, if you really visualize yourself getting there and then you listen and you feel those thoughts, the guilt, the emotions, you can start challenging those beliefs and saying, wait, I want to be that person. I need to make peace with these feelings and these beliefs. And by doing that, you're able to then break the limiting beliefs and be able to go to the new level.
And when did that shift happen for you from not believing in kind of manifesting or feeling stuff to, yes, being that type of person?
So my path has always been not to believe what other people say. Like, I'm a skeptic, right? So I've gone through a lots of different self-discovery. And as I learn pieces, I integrate them. And I'm able to then see things for, you know, the whole branding world, I never believed in, honestly.
Why?
I thought the amount of money people are spending and what they're doing, it makes no sense. Until I studied it. I read like 150 books and I got to understand what it really is. And I'm like, oh, so there's a place for it, but it doesn't work for everything. And the part that I thought didn't make sense was because I was looking at the place where it doesn't work. But there is a place where it does work.
Right.
The problem is that I think most people who talk about broad topics, they don't really understand what they're saying. They don't understand the depth of it. So they don't know when to apply it and when not to apply it. And my path has always been what I call a growth hacking. Right? Growth hacker is you take whatever you have at your disposal and you use it to grow. Yourself, your company, your clients, and like I'm not a coach. Like what you think of coaching, I'm not a coach, right?
Okay.
What I am is I have a person with a lot of experience, with a lot of things that I've learned, and I help people apply what I learned for them. So I'm not trying to help them. Most coaches, the way they approach things is they ask you what you want to do, and you make a goal, and they help you hold it accountable to that goal. Now, don't laugh, because it works.
I have something to say, but go ahead.
I used to think it was hogwash, right? But it works, but not for everybody in the same way. I mean to say, if you happen to have the same personality of the coach, then he might be able to guide you in the way that he would have done it. And then sometimes they do that. And the reason why they don't go the other way is that you wouldn't listen. You wouldn't be able to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not open-minded enough to do something that doesn't come natural to you.
So most coaches listen and ask you for the idea.
So what I do is I challenge.
People. So what I was laughing in the middle of is because you literally taught me how to talk to people in that way. So two things. Number one, I have a limit. And most people, the people don't know this, but because I have the limit, my limit is a new person calling me, asking me for ideas because they think that I'm the smartest. And I guess I am in a sense. I do have experience. Not the smartest, I have experience. I have a limit of 5 minutes and they don't even know that it's 5 minutes. They never know. After 5 minutes, they're already, okay, thank you very much. But I learned that type of coaching from you, which is two things. Number one, to talk extremely fast, meaning like to pretend as if I'm busy. And I know you are busy, but I'm saying like fast. And number two is to challenge that person till they realize that, ah, you're right. Most of the time when people call me with ideas, I ask them this question, would you use your own idea? And they answer no. So I'm like, okay, have a good one. Anything you need, feel free to call me, because I'm not a coach yet. But so, but I'm thinking, and I never told it to you, thank you. You taught me that. So, and I think it's very true what you're saying. Challenge people. A lot of coaches are not there to challenge people. Some are, obviously. So that's extremely important. But how do we know about ideas? I want to get back to that, because so many people have ideas right now. To the listener that's thinking, I have this idea, and I want to do fish boards, and I want to do meat boards. And by the way, we can get to that question, because that's a big one, because probably 50% of the audience, and many people are women, actually, but they also have all these homemade businesses. I'm curious your take on that and how long it's going to last. I think the broader market is going to put these people out of business one day. But
I'll answer your first question.
Yeah.
So when you have an idea, you have two ways of approaching it, right? So if it's a red ocean is an idea that has competition doing the same thing,
okay,
right? So if it's a red ocean, then you look at the competitors and you say, are they doing well, right? Are they making money? Is there room in that market for me? Is the market growing? Do they have money to spend? Can I do what they're doing just as good as them? Or am I a little bit better? Or do I have confidence in that there's a gap in the market that they're doing, that either I can niche or they're doing it a little differently that I could do? In other words, I opened a branding company in a space where everyone had branding companies. It made no sense.
Yeah.
But I saw a problem in the way everyone else was doing branding, that they were always focusing on making noise for the first position, meaning to say they wanted to get the guy who was the leader and make the most noise for him. That's most branding companies' approach. I said, I want to find number two. Spend less money, but clear on who I'm servicing. I want this 20% of the market. Everybody else, all my competitors take everyone else.
Right.
But I'm going to be clear to the market. If you like this, then you're a good fit for me.
Wow.
So I opened a branding company that does that for service companies. You do it for other ones as well, but it's really for services more, because a product, right, a water bottle, you can't sell this as a 50-ounce bottle. It's just not, right? A service, you'll have one sales guy selling this as a 50-ounce bottle and telling you that, well, you just got to put more water into it, right? You'll have somebody else, because it changes based on who you're speaking to. So if you're able to get the clarity and figure out, this is what we all are. Now everybody row the boat in this direction, and then help them internally get their ducks in a row, that everyone understands that we set this expectation to the market. We have to fulfill it. Right. And then when people come through, they'll refer us, they'll like it, they'll enjoy it.
So what is the approach taking the second in position and putting them and going to that market?
The famous example is Hertz versus Avis, right? Hertz was number one. Avis came in and said, we're number two, we have to try harder to please you.
Wow.
So if you want somebody who has to try harder to please you, we're a better fit for you. If you want to go to the leader who already is there and doesn't care about making every single person happy, then go to them. And we take that approach. So we find the people that have what to say, or help them define what they're saying as an alternative position in the market, and help position them so that the world understands it. Now we do first positioning as well. Our first client was B&B Party Rental.
Right.
And we positioned them as the leader in the space. And we were 10 trucks and it did great for him. But what we do differently is we have messaging with clarity. And I like to say like this, if you could take your logo and take it off and put your competitors on, and everything in the ad and everything you're saying is perfect, then you don't have a brand, then you have bad advertising. You have to have it in a way that whatever you're saying in the ad and the way you're saying it, your competitors would never put their name on it, because they could never pull it off.
Wow. Yeah, I think the famous Jim Rohn said that your ability to make money is based on two things: what you are selling, how good you are at selling it, and how difficult it is in replacing you.
Yeah.
That's these two things. How good are you? It's that kind of, I think that's what you just touched on. I mean, you got to be good at what you do.
The problem is that when you look at the world of the people who are very big and they spend the most money, you think that, oh, I should do what Coca-Cola is doing, or I should do what Geffen is doing. And reality is they're playing a whole different game.
Right.
Because when you're going to the market, you're trying to differentiate. They don't need that.
Yeah.
They have distribution. They're on the shelf. All they need is that when you reach for their product versus the one next to it, you have a little bit of a nudge to try theirs, to yours over theirs.
Yeah.
That's all they're looking for.
Well, from my perspective, I love branding and marketing, and I watch a lot and research a lot. I do think that our branding and marketing, majority of it, you talk 90% of the ads, are extremely boring. I'm not talking about yours or others. I'm just saying, I think it's, and probably because the people we cater to are happy with it or something right. like that.
So I'll tell you really what it is, and this is a funny thing about marketing. You never have an accounting firm who files your taxes, and then the guy goes back and says, well, the janitor doesn't think that these numbers look right, right? Or I think that these numbers don't look right.
Right.
In marketing, everyone thinks that they have a data because they're the consumer, right? So everybody believes that they have a view.
Interesting concept I had, which was a few months ago. I called you one day and I said, David, I have tremendous burnout. Is this common? I remember we had a 2-minute phone call where you said, yeah, it's very, very common. And that was the space I was in. I was just extremely burnt out. And I think that burnout is something that you don't get until you turn around 20 or 25. That's when many people experience burnout for the first time. And it's extremely new for them. Can you talk about burnout, what you see for yourself or for your clients, and how to conquer it?
Yeah, so what I think burnout is, if you have to reframe it, it's a lack of direction. When people have a direction where they know they're going, they don't burn out because they're chasing. When you lose your guiding star, when you don't know what you're doing and you're lost, that's where you burn out, because you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do now. Like, I have all this energy and I don't know what to do.
Right.
So that's when you burn out, because then you feel like you're not growing. You feel like you're not achieving. And we're put in this world to create.
Right.
Especially us in our world of creativity, we live in this world of, we have to birth something into the world to make ourselves feel good. And if we're not doing that, if we're not creating or re-systemizing or making a new venture or at least achieving something in our path of growth, which is a whole different conversation, that people don't have goals and right. people don't know what they're going after. And therefore, they don't have the clarity to even know if they got there or not.
Like right.
A lot of people just, they like to throw the dart and draw the circle afterwards. And those are the worst clients anyway. Because I had two clients. One was, we did an infographic. Back in the day, infographics. You know what infographic is?
No.
It's a long graphic with a bunch of information on it that tells a story through pictures. And it used to be very hot. Like, it was the thing. And we were putting them out there and we're getting like millions of views to it. We were getting picked up by non-Jewish blogs and it was driving tons of traffic, and it was very good for SEO and getting us lots of links. And we did an infographic for a diamond client, and he calls me up. We like to review, did it work or not? That's another yeah. thing that marketing people don't often do, is after you do something, you have to actually reflect back. Did it work? Learn from it to then grow. So often the problem is that people deploy something with a marketing company. They don't even go back to the marketing company. They just go into the next marketing company,
wow.
right? And they're never growing. They're never building and reiterating, because they're never learning from it. They're yeah. just going from one to the other, hoping that that people who know how to do it get it right the first time. They don't know that through the failure, they learn something,
yeah.
and then you refine it and you get it better and better. Sidetrack. But so I called up this guy, and he was like, I said to him even before he started, I said, I'm sorry, you know, We thought it would do better. It really didn't get us the numbers we wanted. We had like maybe 100 people who saw it. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. This has been the biggest success in marketing we've done for the past 3 years. I said, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So he said, well, let me tell you what's happening. It used to be my sales team would, people would call up to buy a diamond, and they would spend a half an hour with each person wow. educating them. Here are the 5 C's of diamonds. And the amount of time that we spent with clients, even people that we knew weren't good clients, was taking up so much drag on my team, but it was a necessary evil. When you came out with this infographic, my sales team started saying on the sales calls, let me send this to you, right? So automatically you got their information, you sent over something, and then they reviewed it, and the call went from a half an hour to 10 minutes, because they had something to reference that they could look at on their own, and they just covered the things.
Wow.
So he said, you just saved me 20 minutes with every single salesperson for the next 10 years.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. That was even a possibility of a goal. Like, yeah. I was thinking very much, like when we're vendors, we think success means a sale, but right. It doesn't always mean that, right?
I feel like I had a little bit of a similar story. One of my clients are Klein's Naturals, the nut company, chocolate, dried fruit. And we were doing their Instagram, and you know, where's it going? We do a recipe, we post a picture. It's very nice. After a couple of months, recently was Chabon Shusa B'Shvat, and we did a few videos of their dried esrig covered in chocolate, whatever. And I didn't know how it's going, what Instagram is doing for them or not. Until one day I was in a meeting, and the guy, the CEO tells me, you know, this year was the first year ever that we sold our dried esrig in every single location. I was like, wow, that's the win. After many months of doing it, I feel like that's social media. You do social media. That's social media to many companies. They think they post an ad and people will come rush and buy their pizza today. It's not about that. It's in 3-4 months from now when they want to celebrate or when they're in their store.
So I pose you.
This is,
that's branding.
Yes. And I am part of branding. I clearly know that.
100%.
That's a good point. I have to tell people. I always tell people, by the way, I'm not in advertising and I'm not in marketing. I am branding. And if you want to do advertising, go.
I say social media should be, and not always people do this, it should be branding told in pieces.
Uh-huh.
So if you're slowly putting out stories, right?
Yeah.
But branding is a picture of your brand, right?
Yeah.
So imagine a puzzle piece where you took the whole picture and you took all the pieces apart and then you slow dripped it in social media until they got the picture, right?
Yeah.
That's what branding is. And if you do that correctly, if you know what you're, then it's about the overall feeling that you get from the brand. Or like you just said that people now know that they sell this product. People didn't know that before. And
right.
You were able to give them that piece of the puzzle that makes them view you as an expectation that they have that type of thing.
Right.
I just did
a very cool video. I want to show it to you. I'll put it up on the screen for the people later. Because I feel like my team, I give full credit to my team, completely went out of the box to create this kind of content. And I'm just really proud of it. Check this out.
So great. I also love that you're hopping on a trend. In other words, I've seen that trend before.
Oh, yeah.
and the fact that you're jumping on it is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what you're looking for.
Right. So this is the Bum Burger. Now, first of all, they are one of my favorite clients because they work with us.
Sure.
We're in touch with them every day. They talk to us. Mr. Reiner, the owner, he's just friendly and he's just amazing. And look, their staff is working with us. So we
That's what you need.
This video got thousands and thousands of views,
a lot
more than how many followers they have.
And because there's a kernel of truth in there. All marketing really is taking a truism and exploiting it,
yeah.
Right? And that's really so powerful because we all relate to that. Like,
yeah.
We've all been there, and I've been that guy where I know the owner, right? Because like when you're working with a lot of companies, like you'll go in there, and I'm sure my kids will tell you, when I walk into a place, I'm like, oh, I know the owner. Like, I'm sure you do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
And the expectation, and therefore what, right? Like,
yeah.
It's great.
Thank you. I'm actually proud of them because they're one of the only restaurants that I know that started social media right when they opened, and they didn't wait for that dip.
Right.
Do you find that the companies come to you after they dip, or you take them straight from branding into marketing?
So, you know, all companies are different. Most companies see marketing and branding as a way of solving a problem. And therefore, they have to have the problem first.
Mm-hmm.
So I even tell that to people sometimes where they'll come to us and they're like a brand new business.
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't do any marketing, please. Go sell.
I love that.
First sell.
Yeah.
Understand who your customer is. Understand what they like about you.
Right.
Understand the challenge that you have in the positioning.
Exactly.
Then market it.
But that's what they want to avoid. They don't want to sell.
Right. People like to throw money at problems.
Right. So that's where they're just, here, go sell it for me.
And the answer is you can't, because you need to figure that, like, you have to first establish yourself to understand what's your repeatable process of success before you can really do any marketing or sales. Now, sales you could start doing because that's how you find it. But to do any big initiative, you first have to have a repeatable process of success.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you don't even know what expectation you're setting.
What do you think about me, David? You've known me quite a while. I've called you with some of my biggest problems and ideas. What do you think of me as a person, as a brand, as a company?
So I think the people that are successful in business are the people that find problems, hit failure, and adapt to it. The ones that hit a wall and just give up are the ones that don't go through business. I have a great story of this. I don't know if you've ever seen, but there's a company called Swimply.
Yeah.
You see it? Okay. So in marketing, there's like trends, idea trends, I call them, right? So I get in 1 month, 20 CPA companies call me. And the next month I get, they come in waves. This month, a guy came in with an investor. He wanted to open up a company, an Airbnb for swimming pools.
Right.
I sat down with him and I said, well, you have a problem of possibility that people will sue you,
right?
You have a problem that certain, townships won't like you. You'll have a problem that if you get big enough, Airbnb will just add on that little feature and they'll crush you. And those are your challenges. So I don't know how smart it is for you to do it. And the guy said, you know what? We're not doing it. And they got up and walked away.
Wow.
And then a week later, another guy comes in. I have a brilliant idea.
Really?
Airbnb for swimming pools. I said, I've heard this before. I told him the same spiel. He says, okay, I'll deal with it. And he went on and he became Swimply.
Really?
Yeah. But there was a guy a week beforehand
that had the same idea.
Same idea. I told him the same conversation. And they said,
well, I still want
I'm not doing it.
Right.
And this guy did it. So what's the difference between a successful person and a non-successful person? It's a guy like you who has burnout, hits a wall, gets up, adapts, and says, let me speak to my clients. Let me see what they really need. Let me see how to change my offer. Let me see what I could do. And if you look at all the big companies, they've all pivoted. They started out as one thing, and then they pivot, and they pivot, and they pivot. And the owners that understand that failure isn't failure. Failure is information for now me to be better at achieving my goal are the ones who win. And I think that you see it that way, and I think that's why you're going to make it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
I feel like I already made it.
My name's Surly.
What?
I'm not David.
No?
No.
Why do I call you David?
Because growing up, I was Surly. Okay. And I had a teacher who was a Gaisha teacher. And she would call me Surly. I said, when I go out into the workforce, I am not having everyone call me Surly. Because I thought I'm going to have all Gaisha clients. So I said, I'm going to go by my middle name. My middle name is David. I'm going to be David.
Ah, okay. I thought I have to restart.
No, I became David. And it turns out that I actually like it because my persona of David is a little different than my Surly. Whereas Surly, I'm not as arrogant and I'm more chilled out. And when I hear someone talk to me and they say Surly or they say David, I know which role to slip into.
Ah, right.
So it actually serves me well because I'm able to differentiate like how they know me.
Right. I love that. Yeah, when I did construction for a few years before this business, I went by the name of Leo. So I know, and I did it specifically because I knew it was a character for a while, and then I got very bored working in construction, and now I don't work at all.
That's the way to do it.
I feel blessed.
So what would you tell all the people out there that are just starting out? Like, how did you get the courage to go and make your own thing? I mean, I think the biggest challenge today is that our mindsets and schooling are all conditioning people to work for other people.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's the whole idea of college and the whole idea of everything.
Rockefeller
is to
was the
work
biggest
for
supporter.
Other people.
Yeah, Rockefeller was the biggest supporter of the public school system.
And
he wanted everybody to be students.
So how do you change people's mindsets from working for other people and taking the safe route to working for themselves and going through the roller coaster? Or do you even think it makes sense to do that?
So it's a great question. Thank you for throwing it on, back to me. The answer is no. I changed in the last few months because I had such a difficult challenge. The last few months were very difficult for me. I was already successful, my company was already making money, and I just didn't feel fulfilled. I was just, okay, blah, now what, And that's the ride of an entrepreneur. And that's where I discovered that, no, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. In the beginning, I said I was still all on the high of it. And I said, yes, it's for everybody. Sure, go for it. But then I noticed that, no, it's clearly not for everybody. And saying that it's for everybody is disvalidating those people that are working so hard at it. So that's where I switched and I said, no, it's not for everybody.
And most people fail.
Right. So that being said, I do encourage young entrepreneurs to start either business ideas while they have a job or business ideas from home. I'll tell many, many people, start something from home. And so yeah, that was the question? What was the, what I tell people?
Yeah.
So yeah, so my message to people is not go out there and start a business. My message to people is dream bigger. Dream. By the way, there's something called intrapreneur. You know what that is?
No.
That's when you have a position in a company and you're very successful, then you're considered an intrapreneur. You're making a few hundred thousand dollars a year, that's still considered the life of an entrepreneur. It's just, it's an intrapreneur. I don't know if it's a real word or not. But my message to people is dream free. And happens to be that many young kids listen to this and they did start businesses because of this, because they see, wow, look, so there's a guy, Eli Weber, and he did it. He had a job, but now he has a business. And clearly he struggled. And for many months, I didn't do the podcast. I didn't go out. I didn't go to shows. I'm happy to say that I'm okay with me being either depressed or anxious or just not excited about my life, but continuously getting up and coming back.
So my approach has always been, when I hit those walls of burnout, is to find something else to learn.
Wow.
And I started out doing Google Ads, and then I learned SEO, and then I learned content marketing, and then I learned social media marketing, and then I learned viral content, and then I learned branding, and then I learned sales. I've always taken the approach of find another discipline to learn, to integrate, and by doing that, you're able to feel the growth, and you're able to feel, yeah. You don't get that same burnout, because we're in this world to refine our character and to grow.
Right.
So if you're not growing, then you're falling.
Right.
So you always have to be, and I'm always amazed how people don't read and don't learn, and they're like, I'm good. I'm like, how are you good? Like,
yeah.
Like you have to grow, even if you're working for someone else, right? If you're out there and you're working, and so I'll tell you two things. One is, if you're out there and you want to know how to start your career, step one, don't look for the highest paying job.
Wow.
Look for the guy who will teach you the most that is in a highest paying job, right? So who's the guy who's going to teach you the most?
It's so beautiful.
To get you a runway?
I made that mistake, if I can say. I went, when I started out, instead of going into creativity, which I knew was me, I went to construction, which I knew will pay me $100,000 on my first year.
Yeah, so that's the first thing.
First thing is... So go find something that you will learn and enjoy.
And take an internship. Take free, because that's college. That's going to give you the biggest learning curve, because you're going to learn from somebody else's mistakes. Instead of you having to make all of them, get a little bit of a leap. Second thing is, books are basically people's life's accomplishments and learning and distilled into lessons that you could just absorb. And it used to be you had to have a mentor, like you like back in the day, you had to like find like a blacksmith and he'll take you on for like 10 years before you get like your certificate. Today, that's a book. And you don't have to get approval. Like I could say I'm Seth Godin, he's my mentor, or like I'm Alex Mermozzi, I'm very into now. If I could say that he's my mentor because I'm studying what he's done and I'm learning from him.
Yeah.
And I just go on to the next guy. So read books and absorb it, and here's the kicker, you actually have to do what the book says. So I'd rather you read a book four times and do the stuff in it than read the book and go into the next book, because there are some people that become serial learners and they just are always taking the next degree or they're always reading the next book, but they're not applying anything that they learned.
Yeah.
And if you don't apply it, then you don't gain anything from it.
Yeah.
And people ask me all the time, like, what book should I read next? I'm like, I don't know the problem you're in now. In other words, you have to read the book that addresses the problem that you're in.
You're right.
Or else you're not going to gain anything from it because you won't apply it.
Wow.
Right? I've read a book once, and then I'm like, okay, it was a nice book, but it didn't do me anything. And then I read the book again when I had the problem. And I'm like, how did I miss that? And the answer is...
I can so relate to that.
Right? Yeah. Like, if you're... Even Gemara, right? If you're learning Gemara and you're first going to Rashi and Tosfos before you figured out your own questions, then you don't really understand why they had to say what they said.
Right.
But if you first learn the Gemara and say, okay, this is the problem, now I understand why Rashi and Tosfos had to say what they said, because I understand what was bothering them.
Right.
Right? So you need to first figure out problems. So go out there, do something, fail, have a problem. That's step one. That's success one. Success two, then, is find someone who will teach you, find a consultant or a coach or a book that will teach you a nugget of knowledge, right, on your journey. He's going to be your guide. And then apply it in your own life and try to see what it does. And then learn from those successes and failures. That's the path of growth.
I love that. So true. I'm reading now a book. I totally relate to that, that every book that I read was meant for that time. Sometimes I'll stop in the middle of a book, switch to another. I'm very okay with that. Right now I'm reading a book called Awaken the Giant Within from Tony Robbins. I just love the book. Simple, calm. And he talks about the drivers in life. And he says the only two things driving a person is either pain or pleasure.
That's right. It's fundamentals of marketing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. And he's like, when that switches, sometimes your pain becomes pleasure and your pleasure becomes pain. At a certain day, the not doing your dream will become so painful that you'll have to go and do it.
It's a famous thing.
You're not going to look for pleasure anymore.
Yeah, you have to pick your pain. So the pain of not doing something and being depressed sometimes is bigger than the pain of you taking the risk and failing.
Exactly. He said most people don't do their dreams because they're afraid of the pain. What's it going to cost?
And that pain is far worse than any failure you could hit.
Yeah. So he says they'll rather deal with a devil that they know than a devil that they don't know.
Yeah. Most people are comfortable in being uncomfortable.
So how did you become so willing to get uncomfortable?
So I grew up with, I was not a good student. I probably had dyslexia or who knows, I don't know what clinical things you want to label me as, but I did not do well in school. I needed to have hands-on learning, and school was the opposite.
Right.
They tried to force feed me things, and to me it didn't work. So I really got comfortable with failing.
Wow.
Like, I was okay with doing bad in school.
Wow.
And I always knew that, like, it just wasn't a good manifestation. I found other ways of succeeding. And the way we work is we collect successes, right? Yeah. And that gives us our confidence. So I collected successes through camp and through other areas in life. And then I went back to the areas that I was struggling. And I'm like, this doesn't define me.
Wow.
I know that I could be successful in the right environments.
Yeah.
And I took that with me in life. And I'm like, failure doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine with failing. Because I recognize that it's a path to success.
Wow.
And I got comfortable with failure. And therefore, I was able to... the way I approach a problem is I'll jump for 80% success. I'm not even a perfectionist. I don't even try to do 100%. I'm like, give me 80% to get proof of... I believe in the concept of you should work in minimal viable product. Meaning to say, I had a client, the diamond guy, right? So we were doing social media marketing, and I posted something about a birthstone, right? It was a stone with the blue stones next to it, and I said, I love the birthstone. And the comments blew up. I said, what is this? Why is everyone telling me what their birthday is and their birthstone and how it means so much to them? And I'm like, wait, I hit a nerve, right? So now that I see that there's a nerve there, how do I double down on that? So I said, okay, let me turn that into the next piece of content up. Like, what's the next level up from a piece of social media content? Let me make a blog post. I made a blog post about it. So that got tons.
Wow.
Then I made an infographic. And that got hundreds of thousands of hits.
You mentioned you have had a podcast.
So I had a videographer that worked for me once. And he wanted us to take one day a week, Friday, to give back to the world. So we actually created a video series called Hishtadlus, and we would give over mindsets that we learned over the time. And I don't believe it ever took off. And I think the reason why is that it's one of the hardest things for people to acknowledge that they need help on. That's the first thing. And it requires someone to really work on themselves. And it's really hard to do. And we, it took me a very long time. I think I only came onto this when I was 30. So I took a self-help development weekend. And then I realized from there that we have these beliefs that we all buy into. But mindsets, I believe, are the real strength of success. We Hashem gave us all so much keichus to be able to achieve success if we only believed in ourselves, right? And we get in our way, and we get in our way of our relationships, and we don't even realize what we're doing. Like, these beliefs are really pre-programming us, right. And we don't realize what it is. Like, we don't even see it. And that's why people work with therapists, they see success, or coaches, because you're able to challenge those beliefs and be able to then break through.
I love that. I think that from what you said, the last few things, I think that meditation really is what people need. And I always say meditation is sitting 5-10 minutes a day and just watching your thoughts. What's coming up for you?
Yeah, no, meditations are very powerful.
Is that what you do to prime yourself?
So I do not meditate. I definitely think it's a great thing to do. I think it depends on what your challenge is. Whereas everyone has different challenges and there's different tools to use for different challenges. If you have a lot of anxiety, I think meditation is good. It really depends on what you're facing.
Right. Yeah, I feel like for me, anxiety is something that I feel like it can be seasonal, depending on how relaxed and calm and happy and goal-driven I am in my life.
Right. And the weather.
Yeah,
it's a real thing.
No, meaning to say that I feel like for me it's stages in my life, meaning that I'm either good or not so good and bad things happen.
Right.
That's for me the concept. And the work is to keep on staying on top of my own game in terms 100%. Of mindfulness and clarity and happiness.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, the human journey. I mean, we all have those ups and downs, and being able to, I always say, the world throws things at you. God throws challenges at you. And your job is just to ride the waves. And sometimes people just get caught up with why the wave is there and is the wave, and they don't realize that that's just the way it's meant to be. The challenge is there for you to overcome.
Wow.
And if you jump into the wave and you're like, God doesn't give you a test that you can't accomplish, so then you're good. But if you're going to get yourself down and then you're not, it stops that growth cycle, right? And that growth cycle is what really we all need.
Right. Yeah. Wow. The child challenges makes us stronger.
Yeah, well, there's a great saying, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? So as long as your heart's still beating, you're doing great.
Thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, Tony Robbins is very big into that. He always says that the world makes problems for people to experience so that they could go out and solve those problems for other people.
Wow.
That's what Tony Robbins, I mean, that's his fundamental theory is that God gives you a fundamental problem that he doesn't give others for you to go find the people that are experiencing the same challenges
and
to now be their guide out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So me, I'm trying to think what my challenge is and how I should help people.
Well, this is it, right? You're bringing to the masses the challenges that people are facing that you wish you had something like this to watch.
Yeah.
That when you were doing it, you would have some guidance, right? So
true. Yeah, I'm doing it.
You're living the dream.
Yeah. Thank you, David. Any final messages you want to tell the Tzibir, or your audience, your fans, the people that love and respect you?
Nothing's really coming to mind.
How does it feel to be David Konigsberg?
How does it feel to be David Konigsberg? I don't know. I would never have been anyone else. How does it feel to be Ellie Weber?
I feel the same way. I wouldn't be anyone else. Many times I ask myself, is it crazy what I'm doing? You know, like entrepreneurial work, my brand, my career, the podcast. And then I say, I can't see it anywhere, any other way. Like, I know this is a lot. I know it's very outgoing. It's sometimes risky putting myself out there, being vulnerable. But I can't see it any other way.
Yeah, I think the people that, and I've seen that with brands or people have come to me and say, make me him.
Wow.
I've seen that a lot. Those people don't find success.
Right.
Because you're not him.
Yeah.
You're you.
Right.
And you need to have the expression of yourself birthed to the world. And where I find that people sometimes go wrong, and I have clients that are working with consultants or even other branding companies, and they're like, well, they told me that this is what will work better. I'm like, for them it might work better, but for you, being authentic to who you are works best.
Right. Wow.
So how could you pull off someone else's vibe? Like, if I wanted to be you, I would never be able to do it. I don't have that. I don't have the same. I'm not made the same way.
Right. I called you a few times to ask you about an idea of doing a marketing company, social media marketing for the clients that want to pay less. And it was very funny how every time I did that, I was thrown back onto course to do larger clients, more money and stuff like that. I find that very interesting, how God was pushing me to...
I think us entrepreneurs see God's hand more than people who work for other people. Because at least I could talk for myself, the difference between success and failure is like the difference between a guy paying his bill and not paying his bill, yeah. Right? Like just...
Yeah, exactly.
If God wants me to lose $30,000 tomorrow, the guy just doesn't pay the bill and I'm done.
Right.
Right? Or the flip. It's just one call. Like you get one good client... And like, Your whole energy changes.
I can have now one client that brings me 10 accounts, meaning like they have 10 food brands or something.
Yeah.